Jesus continues the farewell discourse as we know it here. That is his encouragement and teaching of his disciples on this, his last night before arrest, conviction, and crucifixion. That in itself is amazing to me, and perhaps to you if you think about it. Yes, he is God, but he is also fully man. He knows that his time is drawing near very rapidly, just in a few hours. We might expect him to be highly distracted and inward focused at this point, as we would be in all likelihood. And yet his heart is squarely with his loved ones, with these that he has come to save. And so he continues to impart his divine wisdom and guidance to them, even up to the last minute. Even hanging on the cross, for that matter. So here we are, and now the group of Jesus and his disciples has apparently moved on from the upper room where the Last Supper was. Now they are strolling along through the byways on the Mount of Olives. I'm imagining footpaths going through the vineyards of olives and grapes. On the cover of our bulletin is a picture of our local grape or our regional grape. That's the muscadine. We don't have the same kinds that they have there, but I think they look kind of similar. But there they are. They're strolling along these paths on the side of this mountain right outside the gates of Jerusalem. They're heading to the Garden of Gethsemane, which is nearby and a part of that area. And so Jesus begins to talk and to refer to the visual references all around them in the form of those vines. And he is doing that to paint a picture of the relationship as it is to be between him and his followers. And it is also a grim reminder about those who just pretend to be. So let's look at our text. This is John 15, verses 1 through 8. Hear the word of the Lord. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch of mine that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me, and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers, and the branches are gathered and thrown into the fire and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. The grass withers, the flower fades. The word of the Lord stands forever. So Jesus opens here by calling himself the true vine. There in the vineyards, it was easy to see what that meant. The vine is the source of life for the whole plant, including those branches. That's obvious. And the spiritual meaning behind this illustration is that salvation comes from Jesus alone. He is the vine. He is the giver of life. He is the sustainer of the branches. And on top of that, there are all these scriptural references from the Old Testament that we could refer to that would be a part of their Jewish background and understanding. One is in Psalm 80, verses 8 through 11, and it says, "You brought a vine out of Egypt. You drove out the nations and planted it. You cleared the ground for it. It took deep root and filled the land. The mountains were covered with its shade, the mighty cedars with its branches. It sent out its branches to the sea and its shoots to the river." The image of the vine here is that action of God that is mighty and good and fruitful, as He revealed it through the people of Israel all those many centuries ago, as He brought them out of slavery, overcoming evil, establishing them in the land, and blessing the world through it. And finally, the fulfillment of that vine, the blessing of the world part, is He establishes His own Son, His very self, to redeem the world, to redeem the lost. This is the fulfillment of the image of the vine, and it is Jesus. He was and is the true vine. Now, there are a lot of avenues that claim to be the vine, the way, but Jesus here is distinguishing Himself as the true vine. That means the only one, the only way. And that way is the way, the vine that sustains the branches, gives us life, Paul says to believers in Colossians 3:4. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with Him in glory. Christ is our life. Without Him we have none. It's as if we are dead, and we'll talk about that in a minute. He is the true vine. He is the giver of spiritual life. There is no other way. We must be in union with Him to have that type of life. Now, of course, the vine doesn't just exist all by itself. You know, even vines that climb trees have little tiny branches. It's hard to see them, but they're there, little tiny, almost like tiny hairs on some sorts of vines. But for these types, for grapes, tomatoes, other types of vine, we see the branches, they're very evident. And I want to draw your attention here to the two types of branches that are mentioned. There are those that bear fruit and those that do not. Remember, we're not talking about branches. We're actually talking about people here. We're talking about ourselves. And not only are we talking about people, we're talking about people in the covenant community. What does that mean? In the Old Testament, that meant the people of Israel. In the New Testament, that means the visible church. We are a visible church here. We are visible with a building. We're visible with people in it. It's composed of those who profess to be Christians and their young children. And within that visible church, within that covenant community, there are two types of people, two kinds of branches, those that bear fruit and those that do not, those that are alive, those that are dead, strong branches, sterile branches, believers and unbelievers. Two types of branches within the visible church. There's the invisible church, of course. And that is the church, the true church, composed only of believers, past, present, and future, combined and united in Christ. We're the visible church, and a number of us, and I hope all of us, will and are a part of the invisible church as well. But that's not a given. So before those of us who do know Christ in our hearts at this moment, start in our sin, in unmerited pride, considering ourselves to be good branches, I'll make a note that is where the comparison with the vine in nature ends. You see, we are not by nature united to Christ. We are not just naturally a part of His vine, we're not in union with Him by nature. The great 18th century theologian and missions advocate, he was really a driver of the great mission works to India and to China, Charles Simeon, he said that we are plants of a degenerate vine. That means of a sick and twisted vine. So that is to say, if we're talking about our natural inclination, what plant we really grow on, we're in bondage to sin. It's not a good plant. It's like a pigweed or some kind of poisonous plant. It's not a good plant. That's not by nature. We're not part of the good vine, the true vine. And so we have no natural part of this union with Christ. We have no natural part in salvation. We do not deserve it. Instead, it's His free gift. It's His free blessing to us. To use another plant term as well, we are engrafted to Him by His redeeming work. Now, I did not know much about the process of grafting. Perhaps you do. Some of you I know do. But I didn't know much about it until I moved up here about 13 years ago. I still don't know much, but at least I have the basics in my mind. And at least in terms of peach trees. Now, there are other types of grafting as well. But I learned at that point, and you know, feel free to object if I get this wrong, those of you who grow peaches, but actually when you purchase a young peach plant, then that is grafted, the limbs of the peach tree are grafted onto the roots and trunk of a pear tree, I believe. I believe it's a pear or some, I'm pretty sure it's a pear tree, because the pear tree, the roots are stronger than the peach roots. They're less susceptible to disease. They're more tolerant. They're hardier. And those two types of trees graft well together. They grow well together. So that's how it works. When you buy a peach tree, it's actually part peach, part pear. So voila, you have a healthier tree. And that's kind of an interesting concept to me. If you're a good branch, that is, if you're a Christian, that's just a reminder that it's not because of your quality of good branchiness. It's not because you deserved to be a good branch. You didn't earn it. It's because of the one who grafted you into the trunk, or the vine in our case. And we'll talk more about that in just a moment. Now, in our passage, we see this phrase used a number of times, abide with me, or abide in me, in verses 4 through 6. Abide in me, that's a command. That's what we're to do. He's telling us to do this, abide in Him. Therefore, it's something we should decide to do as believers. But what does that mean, to abide in Jesus? Well, we know that it means to live, to live in. But in a real sense, it also means cultivating. And there's another horticultural term, cultivating. It means growing. It means exercising. It means living our faith daily. That's what it means here to abide in the vine, abide in Jesus. It means a lot of things, doesn't it? It means personal study of His Word. It means prayer, constant, because we sense our need of Him. It means pursuing Him. It means witnessing with our mouth and our actions to Him, to all that we know. It means friendship. It means ministry and mission. Each of us to be ministers and missionaries, in a sense. Each of us, wherever we are, whoever we are. It means worship. And it means our attitudes. It means our attitudes. So let's talk for a moment about that in the context of the vine dresser, our attitudes. Verse 1 tells us who the vine dresser is. God. God the Father. He is the vine dresser. We see Him very actively involved in caring for, maintaining the vine. One duty of His that's not mentioned here that I referred to earlier is He's the master grafter. He is the one that takes a foreign branch from a twisted vine, a worldly vine, and He grafts it into the true vine that is Jesus. He brings us into salvation. Those words earlier from John chapter 6 primarily, it's such a rich, revealing chapter. John 6, verse 37, point to His sovereign hand in that grafting, in that salvation. Jesus says, all that the Father gives me will come to me. All that the Father gives me will come to me. So God the Father grafts us, brings us to Christ into that union with Him. A fallen person is redeemed, united with the good vine of our salvation in that sense, and given a different heart, and in that given the ability, not the certainty, but the ability then to battle sin and pursue righteousness. And that's not all. God continues to work in our lives after the grafting, after the salvation. That may be news to you. Indeed, I think sometimes it's presented that the salvation, the decision is it, and then it's good. Then I'm all good. Everything's taken care of. Not exactly. Not exactly. I wish. And you do too. But it's not all taken care of. There's still a process. And this is where the pruning comes in. He prunes. He mentions that. That sounds a little painful to me. I don't know about you. I've always tried to be extra careful when I'm pruning because I'm using those big scissors, and they could really do some damage to a finger, mine or to someone else's. So it's never a good idea to prune around anyone else. You want everyone else to be away. You prune by yourself. And especially when you're using those big limb loppers, you know, those things. I shudder to think. But I'm very careful when I prune, and I hope you are too. It's dangerous. So don't get your fingers between the blades ever. God prunes. He prunes, and we're the branches. He prunes us on He purposely does that. He prunes us. It sounds painful, but He does it for a good reason. And the reason is stated in verse 2, that we may bear more fruit, that we may be more fruitful, healthier. The fruit is simply the good way in which we reflect the vine in the world, the way we speak, the way we act, even the way we feel inside. The ways in which we reflect the vine that is Jesus to others and to ourselves. Lots and lots and lots of ways, and I'll summarize this as our attitudes. God prunes us. He sanctifies us. There's another word. That word sanctifies has the idea both of washing us clean, but also purifying us by fire. A difficult process, sometimes painful. One way of pruning is to spur us on, to convict us to more disciplined and diligent spiritual practice in our lives. Those are decisions that we make. It's a decision to read our Bibles and pray to Him. Now, the more we feed that, the more we yearn for it. It's a decision, though, that we have to cooperate with, that we have to engage in. It doesn't just come naturally. In order to be a good distance runner, you have to exercise more. You have to run more. There's only so far that natural ability can take you. Running is an excellent idea here because, again, there are lots of good athletes in the world, but to run a distance, you can't just be a good athlete. You have to run the miles. You have to train over and over a period of years to get there. The runners who are truly excellent, who are Olympic quality, the distance runners, the marathoners, we'll think of them. Those are some of the most finely tuned athletes in the world, marathon Olympic runners. They generally run between 90 and 140 miles a week. I can't even fathom that. That's a lot to drive in a week, but much less run. Every week, they're building lung capacity muscles, sinews are toughening, their strength, their endurance, their mental fortitude. It takes tons and tons of time and practice and investment. So in that regard, more spiritual practice is the way that God, is one way that God prunes us to produce more fruit, to practice more in order to produce more. But another way is to refine us by fire, to test us in hard things, in issues, to discipline us when we're wrong. Not as a harsh taskmaster, not as someone who delights in disciplining us, but as a loving father who wants the best for his children by refining their attitudes toward virtually everything. That is a biblical principle, my friends, to refine us through discipline because he loves us. Hebrews 12:6, for the Lord disciplines the ones he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. You have heard that phrase, spare the rod, spoil the child. You've heard it. You know what it means. Of course, that doesn't mean we are to beat our children or to discipline them in anger. That's challenging. All you parents know it's tempting to do that at times, but that's not what it means. It doesn't mean to wear them out. But it does mean we're to discipline them firmly, consistently, so that they will learn to grow to be mature, responsible, respectful, caring adults. That's the purpose. We love them. We want what's good for them, so we discipline them consistently and firmly. That's what God does to his beloved children, to us, to believers. Now, you can contrast that with a current trend in our culture. I can't speak to other cultures, but I do know it's in ours, of discipline, which is hardly any restraint at all to these young ones. You build your whole family around them and what they want and what they need, and giving and giving and giving. And the fruit of that is spoiled, entitled, self-absorbed, lazy people who've been hurt by negligent discipline. You might as well just turn them loose, give them some money and a gun and a car at 10 years old, because they'll do just as much harm, but they'll do it when they're older. Discipline. We discipline those we love. And that's the point. God seeks to train us, to grow us through correction. This is his whole process of pruning for the purpose of being even stronger and more effective Christians. All the way through life. All the way through to the end of our days. You might do that through an illness you're facing. He might allow an illness to take root. And that may cause you, hopefully, to place your hope, your desire there less on the healing, less on the medicine and the diet and treatment, and more on the peace. More on the peace that he offers you in spite of the condition that may get better or may get worse. He may do that through confronting you in a bad behavioral sin pattern or situation, like pessimism. Walking around as if nothing good could ever happen again, only thinking about the good old days. And never sensing any good thing in this day. Or gossip or pride tendencies. He may use someone else's gossip to hurt you, to convict you, to change the way you talk and think of others so that you become one who builds up and not tears down. That's a form of pruning, isn't it? This is what he's talking about. He prunes us. He makes us stronger and better. God prunes us because he loves us, not because he wants to hurt us. He wants us to grow grow in our good works, grow in our faith to Him, which also leads to our increasing personal satisfaction and joy. Pruning hurts, but it produces an abundant joy in us. It's an amazing thing about God. But He also prunes the non-productive branches. That is, the ones who pretend or who masquerade or who just go along as believers. Because we're talking about the church here. We're talking about the visible church, the covenant community. In their day and age, it was Israel. Remember, Israel, this chosen nation with so many dead stone, hearts of stone people. They were not all saved at all. These are those who don't really respond at heart to that true vine. They don't abide in Him. They find reasons and excuses over and over not to trust and not to believe. Oh, if God loved me, He would not let this bad thing happen. He would give me what I want. He would not let me hurt like this. Those are the excuses, right? Those are the excuses. Those, the vine dresser who is God the Father, will cut off. Not prune, but cut off entirely. Not just trim up, but cut off. And those branches are thrown away. They are ultimately burned. And that's not accidental language there. It's not a little burn. It denotes death and eternal suffering for those who bear no fruit, who turn away from Jesus. Remember, not everyone who simply says His name or walks the aisle is a good branch. We can do all sorts of things for appearance. We are wonderfully creative in our sin. We can say all sorts of things for appearance. God judges the heart, and those who refuse Christ at heart will be ultimately cut and burned. And that is an awful end. It is the worst. So the invitation, though, is there. This is an invitation. And the warning is an invitation for you to turn and trust and be engrafted in that good vine, that true vine that is Jesus, heart of His own heart, son or daughter of God. But for those who are already there, who are already those good branches, already in the process of being pruned, some more, some less, in your season, it seems to me that the emphasis here is in the union that we have with Christ. And that is truly our life's blood. It's not from all the other things that seek to convince us that they're the most important thing. But it's Jesus. He's our life's blood. No matter what has or is or will occur in our lives, we are strong and we will be through our vine, through our true vine. It gives us life, no matter what. And also there's this other reminder that in our pruning, God works to grow us as even stronger branches. We're not finished products. He sees even more in us. And He prunes us in order to give the vine even more glory, that our lives may just be a living, open tribute to Jesus. It's through our pruning. It's through our signs of failure, of weakness, that we truly show these radical changes externally that we've experienced internally. Paul, good old Paul, he says so many things that we think and that we need to know, and he had some kind of affliction, right? He had some kind of lifelong affliction. We don't know if it was his eyesight. Back then, there were a lot of things that couldn't be treated, right? Don't know if it was his eyesight, epilepsy, some kind of skin condition, stuttering. We don't know what his thorn was, but indeed it was a thorn and it wouldn't go away. He prayed 3 times, which means he prayed a lot, until the Lord convicted him. And he said to Paul, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." In weakness. Do you see what that means? That means that your weakness can be your greatest strength in God's world. He can use your weakness. Johnny, Erickson, Tata, she cannot move her body except for her mouth. How many people? She is weak. She is weak. How many people has she affected for the Lord? Millions. His power is made perfect in our weakness. That's what it means. And that's where pruning takes us. That's where pruning takes us. May we then submit to it. And may we learn from it instead of fighting it and complaining about it and gloom and dooming over it. And may we bear more fruit, because that's what it's about. He prunes us all in ways, and he does that for a very good purpose. Amen. Let us pray.